Anybody else in the room who would like to testify in favor of this bill?
Senator Rennie, Representative Hepler, and committee members. My name is James Merkel, and I live in Belfast, and I'm also a member of the Sierra Club. And I'm a recovering engineer, so any of those technical questions, please throw them my way. LD 586 would turn a lose-lose of appeals, lawsuits, community opposition, moratoriums, and delays into a win-win that I hope I'll explain in 3 minutes. As a retired industrial engineer, I began reading plans and permits and attending meetings. I helped draft 2 white papers on industrial aquaculture, one focused on carbon, the other on nitrogen. Leave it to an engineer. Carbon is linked to climate change, obviously, and nitrogen to shellfish closures and dead zones. Our carbon calculations estimate the 5 facilities, if were permitted, equal 400,000 cars added to Maine's roads, but that's also 15% of Maine's 2030 greenhouse gas budget. Our nitrogen calculations from permit documents reveal a cumulative release of equivalent to 19 Portland City sewers of wastewater treatment facilities into Maine's waters. That's pollution equal to 1.2 million people, or just about the entire population of Maine. There are technologies to reduce both carbon and nitrogen, and they're being used commercially and economically viable right now. So many sectors of our economy expect the waters of Maine to be clean for lobster, shellfish, seaweed, finfish outfitters, tourism, recreation, real estate, Maine resident, and Maine residents. In 2021, the facilities immediately ahead of the Maine proposals in Florida and Denmark had multiple mass die-offs, followed by plunging stock values. Then a catastrophic fire released iron chloride into the sea and air. The National Guard were called in to secure the safety of residents and warn them not to breathe the air or to eat fish. If Maine required low to zero effluent facilities, citizens and companies would realize benefits. By meeting the Clean Water Act's intent originally was discharge elimination. It's even in the name of the permit. It didn't say less, it said discharge elimination, and best practicable technology permits and monitoring would be simplified. Facilities would complement wild fisheries, not threaten them. Facilities could be closer to markets, transportation hubs, and power sources. The costs and footprints of site stabilization, forest liquidation, and discharge pipelines are eliminated. If freshwater polyculture systems are used, seafood and vegetables are produced while reducing carbon footprints and the costs associated with feed, sludge disposal, and pumping, making climate commitments possible. Most importantly, LD 586 would ensure Maine's brand, its pristine coastline, is spared excessive carbon and nitrogen pollution. I really thank you for your time and listening, and I do am open to any of those technical numbers kind of questions. I'm what I call a recovering engineer. So I try to deal in my commodity is accurate data.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Merkel, for being here. Impressive. You've studied quite a bit, I can tell. So you think these systems are doable? They're self-contained systems?
Yeah, I've given 4 examples in my printed literature and the Sierra Club fact sheet, and they are growing in some cases big greenhouses. So the nitrogen is being taken, that nutrient rich water, and then it's growing a greenhouse. It's providing the nutrient for the greenhouses. And one of the key is if you're using salt water, the sludge is, you can't do anything with the sludge. So all the proposals in Maine don't have permits in place for sludge. They don't even know where they're going to put it. And if you ask them, you're going to follow a rabbit hole. So that's what they say, but no one wants to take it. No one's permitted to take it. Even the Jonesport facility is dumping right now in Ellsworth, and they don't have a permit for it. It's only for residential, but Kingfish Maine is running the Franklin Aquaculture Facility, RAS facility, right now without a permit for their sludge. So just so you know. Yeah. But these facilities then would use that nitrogen to grow food. And then they have no tailpipe.
Right.
And so you think of the savings. I mean, I'm a recovering industrial engineer too. So I used to work in a large factory. But when you don't have to put a pipeline out half a mile out into the sea, you can save so much money. It's incredible. Plus being close, you know, so there's a lot of advantages. And these systems are, I say, up and running.
Isn't there a system in Lewiston or somewhere growing lettuce? And
yes. And they're growing tilapia. Some of the freshwater species make it a little easier. Yeah. The industry has been wanting to sell salmon. And salmon can be raised in freshwater. And so they are still, I think it's a Wyoming facility growing salmon. It's out in the Midwest. Growing salmon and vegetables.
We're trying to grow them in the Sandy River, too. and they're freshwater.
Yeah. But carnivores are harder to grow in recirculating, and they often require, because they'll taste bad, so they require a high volume of circulation. And even before they harvest the fish, they have to really flush the tanks. And the other thing are having is a lot of diseases, and they can't control them. And so in the supermarkets, people in British Columbia have taken 20% of the fish on the supermarket shelf and traced disease within those salmon that came from Norway originally, from the salmon aquaculture from Norway has made it all the way out to British Columbia.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Merkel. And thanks for our interchange on email.
Yes.
And so one of the questions that I had, and I was whether these discharge elimination, which would mean zero discharge. I mean, I say I owned an outboard motorboat. I don't. I'm a canoeist, but that did. And wouldn't that mean like every time I turned that motor on, it's not electric, it would not be an electric motor, that I would be adversely affecting the marine environment? Anyway.
Well, the idea of the zero discharge from our bill was to really simplify permitting and also prevent biosecurity issues, because that effluent can affect wild stocks. Our bill also, we would be very flexible in the rules when we start to develop the rules. For example, Nordic Aquafarms was proposing 3 Portland City sewers worth of nitrogen. And that's 13 times the Belfast City sewers of nitrogen. To me, would double the population of Belfast nitrogen out into the water be too much? My gut sense says we shouldn't double the nitrogen of Belfast sewer into the water. So if they had a system that would say be 1/10 of the Belfast City sewer. So this is what we have to work out in the rules, not 19 Portland City sewers added to Maine's waters. We're ready to permit those. I mean, I heard a lot of people speaking for our current regulations, but we are ready to permit those. And I'd say, I think a half of a Portland City sewer of nitrogen is too much. But if a system is close to zero, there's a company called iCell. I gave information on it. They make fermentation digesters, and they grow all that bacteria. They dry and make food pellets for aquaculture from them. They're not saying they're zero, but they would get it down probably like the 90% or higher, like 95% lower nitrogen. So the Belfast facility then, if they were coming to town with not 1,500 pounds a day of nitrogen, but 100, that's what the city is right now. The city puts out 100 pounds of nitrogen. They're saying 1,500 pounds. If they said we're going to put 50 pounds of nitrogen after we do all this biodigestion, we're like, great. No one's going to be fighting them. But right now, the citizens are not going to go away on this, because it means too much to us to be putting. I mean, if you look at the maps of where the shellfish closures are up and down the coast, they're everywhere. And this is the leading issue to toxic algae blooms and red tides is nitrogen pollution. So it's not just a Maine problem. It's a global issue. Nitrogen from agriculture runoff.
I
Hey, Jim. I'm waiting for Jim's. Every time I hear his question, I'm like, God, I wish I could answer that one.
Sometimes
ask me, like, Jim.
Sometimes I feel like Columbo up here.
No, you're great, because I love the your thinking is probably like mine. So I think you have that recovering engineer in you too.
We just went to Bigelow Labs and talked about algae blooms and octons and all that. And the red tide, is that a naturally occurring instance, or is that a man-made occurrence?
Well, it's highly linked, from what I read, to nitrogen and phosphorus and other things that we're being emitted. It may happen in nature by itself, but it'll be way more common with higher nitrogen levels.
And that's just discharged in all cities along the coast?
Every city does. Yeah.
Is there a way to mitigate phosphorus discharge?
Yeah.
Nitrogen?
Well, in fish, in aquaculture, the feed you feed them can get four times higher phosphorus just by feeding a different feed source to salmon in captivity, mm-hmm. for example. But, I'm using the example of the Portland City Sewer, because they were outputting 2,300 pounds of nitrogen in 2017, and they did upgrades to their sewer, and they're down to 500. 2,300 to 500, because the citizens of Casco Bay says, we don't. And if you read all the reasons why, it was because of toxic algae blooms, nitrogen right. pollution, and that's why they did it, and it's successful.
Right, but I'm just saying, there must have been a mitigation process.
Right.
To go from 2,300 to 500,
yeah,
in their processing of it.
That was mostly aeration, and I just got their reports from Scott, the head of the department, and so I've been in touch with him to get his numbers, so I'm not giving you secondhand numbers that I read in the newspaper about their process, so I have all those documents.
So last question is it possible for these aquaculture to get their nitrogen levels down as well?
They're doing it. So there are these companies may tell you today or anytime that they don't want to do it. Nordic Aquafarms was offered by Upstream Watch, a group in town, to say, why don't you put that thing instead of this forest people love, where they want to take 40 acres. We love it. It's our borderline. Put it up in a field that's already compacted soils and make it zero effluent, and we'll stop fighting, but they're still in Supreme Court, and our side just won the case on rights, title, and interest against Nordic at the Supreme Court. So they just lost, and they also have an outstanding case against them for not using the best technology. That case is still before the Supreme Court. There's a huge battle in our community over this. And what happened in our town, they were a full year behind closed doors. Nobody had one word of Nordic coming to town. The first hearing to look at the zoning, three rooms of people were full, 140 testimony opposed, and the city council, I watched them all, just get a paper from the lawyer that they already had prepared, and they went and approved the zoning change in front of all their citizens. They were in the back room for, I thought it was 6 months, but we just got Freedom of Information Act FOIA request, and it was a year. Hmm. They were negotiating with the water district to get that parcel with no, the citizen were completely blindsided by this. And so I think that it meant that we had to catch up. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Mr. Merkel. Yeah. Good luck with your recovery.
I'm still recovering.
Thank you again. Representative Thorne sort of raised the issue about red tide and paralytic shellfish poisoning and whatnot. Because you mentioned diseases, but is it also, when you said lots of diseases, did you mean diseases to the fish themselves? And if so, could you say a little more about that?
Yeah. I teach sustainability at a university. And I try to tell my students, find one monoculture that doesn't need chemistry to keep it from having diseases. And As soon as you crowd a lot of one species together in a confined area, they never see the sun, they're in a controlled environment, they're going to start spreading disease, and they're going to multiply very quick and outpace whatever antibiotics. So you develop very strong strains of diseases in the aquaculture sector. If you look at their literature, they're struggling and they're having mass die-offs because of that. And that is in the effluent. Like, you can't filter out certain viruses. They say they use UV, but studying, we talked to the manufacturers of the UV and they say, well, any particle that's in the water still and the virus is in that, the UV may not hit it because the UV is going through water. So you're going to get things through. And that's what we're concerned about. And there's many viruses affect a finfish. And some of them won't transmit to, say, other species, but some will. And when you think of a 4-foot tailpipe, and it's putting out smell, nitrogen, and all this fish culture water, everything is going to congregate around it. And the study done in Port Moton Bay on lobster catch is that lobster catches are down 50% near net pens, but it's the reasons why is because they use their smell receptors to find food. So if those big tailpipes where they're coming out and putting that big plume, the lobster there can't find their food. When they're sitting on eggs, they have to smell to find something to eat. And if the whole water smells like salmon, they can't find it. And so that although RAS was being sold as a way to be better than net pens, in some way, it's probably worse. It's a bigger, it's a worse incubator for disease.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.